Hi, it's Mountain Edition. All the news from the week here in the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Kristen Kay, and I'm here with Wyatt Orm. Wyatt, it's pretty busy out there.
It is indeed definitely peak season with New Year's right around the corner.
Will you make it till midnight?
I hope so.
I definitely won't. Well, it's been pretty busy here at Aspen Public Radio, too. Lots of news from this week. We'll hear from Governor Hickenlooper ahead of the legislative session and from an activist who was here to call attention to a woman who took sanctuary in Carbondale earlier this year.
Also, the Me Too movement is on the minds of audiences attending the 26th Academy screenings in Aspen. Some Oscar contenders have been accused of sexual harassment.
And is that charity you gave your money to this holiday season actually charitable?
It's the last show of 2017, and we're feeling pretty charitable ourselves. The biggest stories from this week coming up on Mountain Edition.
So Wyatt, you and I talked previously about CHIP. It's a government program that helps with healthcare costs for children and pregnant women, and it covers 850 families in the Roaring Fork Valley.
Right. And to ensure that they still get financial assistance, regardless of budget talks in Washington, D.C., Colorado lawmakers took action last week. Allison Bechtesh reports.
Governor John Hickenlooper filed for emergency state funding to cover any gaps to CHIP that federal inaction might cause. Yesterday, the bipartisan Joint Budget Committee approved assistance through the end of February. The state dollars come from the Children's Basic Health Plan account, not general funds. If Congress does not pass a budget today, but reinstates CHIP funding early in the new year, those state funds will not be used. Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Why, what does this mean for families with children on CHIP?
Well, this is really just a stopgap measure until the federal government acts. If the feds don't act, these families could still lose this insurance.
Okay, moving on to other news. Carbondale-based Wilderness Workshop joined 15 other environmental watchdog groups in a lawsuit against the federal government.
As Elizabeth Stewart-Severy reports, the organizations want to see real enforcement of a rule that prevents methane waste.
In 2016, the Bureau of Land Management adopted a rule that requires oil and gas companies to fix leaks and reduce the waste of natural gas on public lands. It's known as the methane waste rule, and the Trump administration recently decided to postpone deadlines for companies to comply. Wilderness Workshop joins the National Wildlife Federation, the Western Environmental Law Center, and a dozen other groups in challenging that decision. They say the rule improves public health, reduces climate impacts, and saves taxpayers money. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
WeCycle, the bike share program in Aspen and Basalt, wrapped up its fifth year last week. Pass holders in 2017 took over 40,000 rides.
Nearly all rides were taken by WeCycle's season pass holders. There are about 1,500 of them. The majority don't live in Aspen and say they use WeCycle to avoid traffic. Basalt's WeCycle system saw a 20% increase in ridership in 2017. Most rides were to and from Rafta bus stops. In 2018, WeCycle will be fare free to all riders in both Aspen and Basalt for the first 30 minutes of each ride, thanks to financial support from Aspen, Basalt, and Eagle County.
Colorado lawmakers returned to the Capitol on January 10th to begin a new legislative session. Governor John Hickenlooper is at the end of his term.
State House reporter Benta Berkland sat down to talk with him about his priorities for the next few months.
Governor, last session there was a big focus on transportation funding. Are we going to see that be a focal point again, as well as a lot of discussion about reforming para?
I think we'll see transportation and para. I hope we see some discussions on affordable housing. You know, when you have a state that's growing as rapidly as Colorado, you can't keep up on your affordable housing anywhere. But I think transportation will be a big deal, you know, one way or the other.
How much can get done? As you know the system pretty well down here, in an election year, we have a governor's race to replace you. A lot's happening nationally. That adds another unexpected element to any session.
My goal is to try and find nonpartisan approaches to additional resources for transportation. You know, you always fear that no matter what you say, they're going to come back and say, well, why didn't you do this? Or if you say right, they're going to say left. If you say up, they're going to say down. But I think this year might be different if we're careful to make sure that revenue goes in the right place and the projects are really what the state and the voters care about.
You called a special legislative session that did not meet success. A lot of hard feelings on all sides from lawmakers I talked to afterwards, not necessarily to you, but just the whole process and how it ended up. Does that change things going into the session, and how about resolving that underlying problem?
You call a special session, and you really hope for the best, and sometimes things don't work out. It was an effort to correct a mistake that this building made, and I accept part of that blame along with the General Assembly. I do really hope, and we will do everything we can to find the solutions to correct that mistake in terms of these regional boards and their funding. And I don't think it should create bad blood unless people want to have bad blood.
You've had a lot of departures, your chief of staff, some of the cabinet positions. What's that going to be like, not having some of your trusted advisors leading into this final session?
I think it's a fact of life that people come to work in public service jobs, and they take, generally at these high management levels, they take large pay cuts. Doug Friedenesch took a 90% pay cut to come work for the state for 3 years. He couldn't afford to keep doing that. Pat Myers is going to come in and be the new chief of staff. He's completely different. He doesn't have any political experiences. He doesn't have a bias on most of these issues one way or the other. But he's a really thoughtful, careful, thinks deeply about things. And I really look forward to working with him. So as much as I'm going to miss Doug, I'm looking forward to working with Pat Myers tremendously.
One thing we didn't anticipate coming into this session, some of the sexual harassment allegations and formal complaints. There's still more reporting to be done on that issue. How is that going to impact next session?
There's no point in avoiding it. There's a cloud over the building in a way, but I think it's resolvable. I mean, I think we're going to the General Assembly is going to come together, and they're going to look at what is the right way to make sure that the women, that all people feel safe to speak out when they feel uncomfortable in their workplace. And especially here, I mean, we should be the paragon of places where anyone should be able to come to work and not feel in any way ill at ease or that they're receiving any bias against them in any way. And if they do feel that way, they should feel absolutely free to speak up and get a fair hearing. It's tricky, right? I mean, I think the whole thing is going to be a very difficult and important to get right process. But that's what the General Assembly is good at, right? This is the kind of thing where they will put in the time and effort, and I have every belief that they'll get it right.
Do you think there should be more transparency?
It depends on whether transparency helps protect people that feel that they're the victims of sexual harassment or in some way. Sometimes that transparency makes people feel more vulnerable.
Thanks for talking to us.
It's always a pleasure. Good to talk to you.
I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Wyatt Orme.
And I'm Kristen Kay. And Wyatt, obviously, if people are listening to Mountain Edition, they want to stay informed about local news.
They certainly do. And one of the ways they can do this is by visiting Aspen Public Radio's Facebook page. While you're there, don't hesitate to give it a like.
There you can interact with our station through comments on our posts and by messaging us directly.
You can also listen to interviews our State House reporter Benta Berkland did with other lawmakers in Denver.
Check it out by searching Aspen Public Radio on Facebook.
In a survey, Aspen residents again identified the health of the Roaring Fork River as a top concern for the community.
Elizabeth Stewart Severy reports.
Residents who took the City of Aspen Citizen Survey were asked to rank how important it is for the city government to take action on 11 potential issues. 85% said it was very important or essential to protect the Roaring Fork River. This ranks above other key issues, like ensuring access to workforce housing, managing and reducing traffic, and increasing child care availability. More respondents this year said it's important for the city to increase access to affordable, locally grown food and to improve bike and pedestrian connectivity. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Glenwood Springs has a new arts and culture board.
Claire Woodcock reports.
Earlier this month, Glenwood Springs City Council selected 7 applicants to serve on the city's new arts and culture board. Brian Smith is the city's Parks and Recreation Director. He says the new board will be instrumental in creating and promoting educational opportunities across art forms. He also says the board will work on public arts projects around the city, as well as advising City Council on how best to help fund the arts.
This new board really is a great resource for the public to come and be engaged, be involved, and we hope to see a lot of really wonderful initiatives, a lot of beautification projects, and a lot of new arts programming in the city.
City Council formed the Arts and Culture Board after severing ties with the nonprofit Glenwood Springs Center for the Arts earlier this year. A city financial investigation determined questionable spending on the part of former Glenwood Center for the Arts director Christina Brusig and a lack of oversight from its privatized board. The Parks and Recreation Department is currently working on bringing the former Glenwood Springs Center for the Arts building up to code in anticipation of again using the space for arts programming. Claire Woodcock, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
The Open Space and Trails Board met last week to discuss proposed trail alignments through the Crystal Valley. Elizabeth Stewart-Severy has been following the issue and is here to talk about progress. So Elizabeth, there's been a lot of public interest in this potential trail, more than 500 comments. What does that feedback look like?
Over 80% of the people who commented or took the survey support some kind of trail, but there's also been very vocal opposition and criticism from some Crystal Valley residents about the process. The board is really conscious of this criticism, so the meeting was clearly meant to show that they want to take public feedback seriously, and the biggest areas of concern were wildlife impacts, costs, and the process itself.
Okay, so let's go into the wildlife concerns a little bit more, because I know that's a big one. What did the board have to say about those?
There's a herd of bighorn sheep up in the Crystal Valley that is dwindling, and it has been for a couple generations of sheep, even without a trail. There's also really sensitive riparian zones. It's a narrow canyon, and the river has already been impacted significantly by the highway and the old rail bed. And then there are places where there's just this wide range of biodiversity, like Philoha Meadows. And the board was really clear that they want to minimize wildlife impacts, that they see the primary purpose of the open space program as environmental. So they took the idea of putting any kind of a trail through Philoha Meadows totally off the table. The board was really clear that they want to take a holistic approach to this planning, almost as if it were a Crystal River management plan rather than just a trail. So they want to look at how they might be able to not just minimize impacts, but how they might actually be able to improve the habitat and the quality of the river. To do that, they'll probably need to work with other agencies like Colorado Parks and Wildlife, the U.S. Forest Service, Pickens County's Healthy Rivers and Streams Board.
So that sounds like a huge project. Is there a roadmap to get there? What is the process from here?
Yeah, so it is the biggest and most complex project that Open Space and Trails has dealt with so far, and it will be expensive. And the board asked Open Space and Trails staff to look into even more options. So what would it look like to widen the shoulder of the highway in some spots, or what would it look like to go with a narrow kind of soft surface trail in some areas rather than a wider paved trail? And the board is also really sensitive to that criticism of the process. So in particular, people who live in the Crystal River Valley felt they should have been consulted more often and earlier. And while Open Space and Trails staff provided a ton of information online and they held multiple meetings both in Carbondale and in Redstone, the board still decided that they want to hire a consultant who's an expert in dealing with public process moving forward. They think it's appropriate to kind of slow down, let some of the heat of this debate cool, and make sure that all of the stakeholders have a voice.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth.
You bet.
Jeanette Fizguera is an immigrants' rights activist from Denver. Time magazine named her one of 2017's most influential people. She was just in Carbondale raising awareness for Sandra Lopez, a mother of three who's in sanctuary.
So we're fighting back like Sandra is doing.
Jeanette Fizguera is talking through a translator to a small crowd gathered at the 3rd Street Center in Carbondale. She tells them how to help the woman on the projector screen in front of them. Sandra Lopez is physically less than a mile away, but she's on Skype because she can't leave the place she's living. She has a deportation order, but Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, avoids what they consider sensitive places. Lopez has taken sanctuary in the basement of a church parsonage. Help Sandra, Jeanette Fizguera tells the crowd, by calling your representatives.
But to get this passed, we need 75% of the state legislature to sign on.
In Colorado right now, there are 5 people in sanctuary. That's more than any other state. Fizguera helped start the sanctuary movement here, not knowing she herself would eventually use it. She was in sanctuary earlier this year at a church in Denver.
I founded the movement, and I didn't need it, because they kept extending my time to figure out my case. But this year, with this new administration, everything changed drastically. I heard about the case of Guadalupe Hernandez in Arizona, who is also an activist in the same situation as I was. When she went to her ICE check-in, she was arrested and deported immediately. And I just thought, am I going to be next?
Vizquiera decided to enter sanctuary, and the national media noticed.
Demonstrators outside the immigration office in Colorado, supporting a mother of four from Mexico, Jeanette Vizquiera.
She spent 3 months living at the First Unitarian Church in Denver.
89 days. 89 long days. I tried to keep myself busy. Like Sandra, I only saw my kids on weekends, but tried to make it so they had a life that was relatively normal. I'd call them and wake them up in the morning. They'd tell me when they were ready to go to school, and I'd organize volunteers from the church to pick them up and sometimes bring them home. My happiest days were on weekends when they were with me.
Vizquiera thought she would be in sanctuary for all of Trump's presidency.
It would have been a big challenge, but not impossible. It was a fight I was going to win, even if it meant 4 years living in a church.
Her years as an activist helped her make connections with politicians, and they had the power to keep her in the country.
Our Senator, Michael Bennett, learned about my case in 2009, and he promised to help me, and he did. Congressman Jared Polis helped me for many years with private bills.
Private bills were sort of a last resort. If you could get someone in Congress to introduce a private bill on your behalf, ICE wouldn't deport you. But it doesn't work that way anymore.
Now, private bills have changed drastically. It's much harder. There's a much smaller chance they get approved.
Sanctuary is an option that can work, Vizquiera says. It might be the only option.
As of right now, our cases in Colorado are working. It's not as if we just enter sanctuary and don't do anything else. We keep working, looking for legal solutions for each case. Each case is different, so we work with lawyers. We work with the community, visit politicians, so that those in sanctuary can stay here, outside the churches.
And that's what Vizquiera wants for Sandra Lopez in Carbondale and for herself, to stay in the country with her children. This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Wyatt Orm.
And I'm Kristen Kay. In other news, local law enforcement has confirmed Vice President Mike Pence and his wife Karen are visiting Aspen this week.
Aspen Skiing Company's Environment Foundation announced that in its 20th year, it's giving out more than $90,000 worth of grants.
A new Aspen gallery owner is bringing the surf to this ski town.
And one Crested Butte resident is spurring the Aspen Soperus Ranger District to solve the poop problem at a remote trailhead.
Yuck.
Yuck indeed.
Those stories and more news are on our website now. Take a listen at aspenpublicradio.org. Colorado's Secretary of State wants you to make sure the charity receiving your money this holiday season is actually charitable.
The website checkthecharity.com is run by the Secretary of State. There, you can see which organizations are registered with the state and whether or not they're in good standing. Of the nearly 450 charities in Eagle, Pitkin, and Garfield counties, most are in good standing. But on the website, you can see those that aren't. For example, if you search for Pitkin County, you'll see the 24 Hours of Aspen Foundation has been suspended for not paying fees, and Aspen Center for Integral Health has withdrawn, meaning they're no longer accepting donations. Jack Bender is a prolific television director with credits from Game of Thrones and The Sopranos. When he's not with his actors, he's working on new paintings and sculptures.
Wyatt, I know you are one of the last remaining humans who have not gotten sucked into Game of Thrones. So this might not mean much to you, but his work is on display this winter at a new gallery in downtown Aspen.
For Game of Thrones fans, Season 6, Episode 5 is unforgettable. On the night it initially aired, The Door was viewed by nearly 8 million people. Bender received an Emmy nomination for that episode last year. He's also directed episodes of shows like the CBS adaptation of Stephen King's Under the Dome, where his paintings become a plot point for Pauline, a character in the first season that falls into trances where she can see the future through painting canvases.
In her dream, I was on this hill, looking up at these.
Jack Bender has been known to work on art projects while on set.
If it's taking an exorbitant amount of time to light a set, I'll go into the other room and throw some paint around.
His style is visceral. He says it's been like that since he was a kid, when he would ride his bike through the alleyways of Los Angeles.
I was fascinated by, like, stuff that was thrown out.
His most renowned piece, The Elephant in the Room, is emblematic of that style. It now hangs in the new Taylor Dayne Goulet Gallery Plus, where Gallery 1949 was before. Bender says making art for the big screen and the canvas are one and the same.
I get as lost watching an actor do a scene that I'm directing as watching a brushstroke on the canvas. You just get lost in that other world, and it's a wonderful place to be. You can't live there all the time, but it sure is tempting.
Jack Bender's work will be up in Aspen through the winter. Claire Woodcock, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
An initiative to address mental health will launch on January 1st. Allison Bechtesh reports.
Pitkin County's Health and Human Services Department will oversee the nearly $500,000 project. Among the partners is Aspen Valley Hospital. The facility sees nearly 300 behavioral health visits a year to the emergency room. But as CEO Dave Ressler says, it doesn't have the resources to fully assist those patients.
We're not licensed to manage psychiatric patients. It's a whole different set of needs that these patients have.
He knows there's a stigma related to behavioral health, but says it's a pervasive issue that needs to shed its shame.
Every one of us, in one way or another, in the course of our lives, are going to be touched by mental health. It may not necessarily be us, but it'll be someone we love. Mental health will affects everybody, regardless of your class or your socioeconomic status or anything else.
He says the new partnership, which also involves the City of Aspen, area schools, law enforcement, and the Aspen Skiing Company, will treat mental health services just like a checkup at the doctor. The partners are all contributing funding that will go to MindSprings Health and Mountain Family Health Centers.
The combination of MindSprings Health and Mountain Family Health Centers are creating a much more comprehensive system that includes a community-based mental health team. So that is a licensed therapist, a case manager, and also an advanced practice psychiatric nurse practitioner.
These are new positions that we don't have in our valley right now.
That's right. And it is a new position to have school-based therapists, which is really exciting. Ultimately, what they're trying to do is create the ability for a patient to access the system at whatever level their need is and have all of the services available if their need is exacerbated, it has greater demand for resources, and it's integrated.
Can I ask you a little bit more about our current state of mental health services? Why are we looking to pad that out? What's missing?
In the most simplistic terms, this is a difficult population. Again, because of the stigmatization, and oftentimes people don't know where to go for help. So what we're trying to create, and what I think this is accomplishing, is access to care.
You talk about treating the whole person.
Right.
What do you mean by that?
You really can't separate mental health from physical health. Those are two dynamics that combine to determine whether or not a patient is going to have a long and high quality life. And so you have to treat both. And with equal importance. For too long in our culture, we've stigmatized mental health in a way that people are embarrassed or don't feel comfortable coming forward for help. And they have to understand that just like they may be afflicted with cancer or diabetes, they can be afflicted with mental health, and there's no shame. We have to treat all of it equally.
Dave Ressler, the CEO for Aspen Valley Hospital. Dave, thanks so much for being with me today.
My pleasure. I'm happy to have the conversation.
The 26th annual Academy screenings are underway in Aspen. Some of these films, which could win awards, feature actors and producers who have recently been accused of sexual harassment.
Arts and culture reporter Claire Woodcock spoke with people attending the film screenings and others about these accusations.
The Wheeler Bar Lobby is full of eager filmgoers chatting over cocktails. There's talk of who's going to take home the film industry's biggest prize, but also of who deserves it.
Just because somebody does a bad thing doesn't mean that they also can't contribute to society and do a great thing.
I mean, if it was really bad, then I probably just would hate everything about them.
There's a gray. The life is not black and white, it is gray.
Susan Rubel is Aspen Film's new executive director. She says this year's Academy screenings are giving Aspen audiences more than just the films vying for Best Actor and Best Picture awards.
We've really sort of peeked under the hood to try to find some other interesting bests that people may not normally think about on their own.
Jane Schodel is director of programming this season with Aspen Films Academy screenings.
Her intention was to give Aspen audiences a dose of films that will provoke discussion around global issues, like race, poverty, addiction, and war, to name a few.
These are all really entertaining films, but they have some gritty, deep issues that sort of underlie them or that are the sidewalk on which they stand. My dream is that people leave the cinema and they talk all the way to the car about the movie.
In October, a New York Times investigation revealed sexual harassment allegations against Miramax co-founder Harvey Weinstein. Roughly 70 women have now made allegations against him, and a wave of accusations against dozens of actors, executive producers, and media personalities have followed suit. Steve Schiffman is CEO of the Cincinnati-based company Michaelman. He says the conversation around sexual harassment is both frightening and frustrating.
All these things that have been sort of suppressed for years seem to be coming to the surface now, but I'm encouraged that women are finally feeling comfortable to bring these issues to public.
Not everyone agrees. Callan von Renkel lives in Aspen and sells art for a fine art gallery downtown. She's worried about the backlash.
I think it's been very permissible in our culture in the past, since I was born. Sometimes for a man to give a woman a pat in the fanny or whatever. So now for people to lose their job over something like that, I think is inappropriate. But there are much more serious offenses than maybe they should lose their job.
Aspen Films Academy screening series includes films where well-known actors and producers have been publicly accused in recent weeks. Susan Rubel, a film industry exec herself, says in her experience, the landscape didn't used to give women permission to speak up.
There were things that one turned a blind eye to, or that one learned, oh, right, I don't ever want to go to a meeting alone. Oh, there's the unwanted touch. Oh, there's the weird brushing up against. And they were things that I think you kind of looked at as casualties of the career. This generation of women was raised with a little bit more girl power than we were given growing up, and they just said no more, and I'm so proud of them.
Jane Schottel reveals that at a young age, she was told she needed to show skin in order to be successful in this business. She calls this behavior a power play common for executives to make and admits to feeling a little defensive when she first read the headlines regarding her industry.
Film is a business filled with extremes. The fact that we're even having this conversation, I never thought that I would see it in my lifetime, and I couldn't be happier and more thrilled and slightly regretful, and I have a lot of big basket of emotions around it, but I do not want it to stop.
The films being showcased through Academy screenings all have the potential to take home top awards. This season, Schottel believes diversity will be reflected in these decisions.
Given a lot of the things that have happened socially, politically in the last 6 months, I predict that in a lot of the award categories, you're going to see women considered and nominated more than they might have been in the past.
Which bears the question, if an artist does something bad, should it impact the way we perceive the artist's body of work? Perhaps the series of films this Academy season won't only offer an escape through cinematic storytelling, but a launch pad for communication and change. Claire Woodcock, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Wyatt Orme. You can find more news from the Roaring Fork Valley and from all around the world on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune in to Valley Roundup tomorrow at 3:30. We have a really special show to close out 2017. All the members of the APR news team will talk about the stories that impacted our community the most, and just some of our faves, too.
It'll be a good time. Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.